Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how are you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I am outstanding.
Nice conversation there with Taylor.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking. You know, I'll admit, I've always been a fan of the way Hall plays the game. You know, he had he had areas of his game that he had to work on, but a lot of that was just more maturing than anything else, which what you expect. But you like right now, I think you can make the argument that Taylor Hall might be the most, you know, he's right up there with most dominating wingers in the NHL.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that his skill set allows him to take over games and certainly allows him to dominate in games. I think there are guys who are probably at this stage pouring in some more goals that maybe make them themselves a little bit more dominating, I guess you could say. But Hall is establishing himself as a superstar in this league. You're a top 10 scorer, you're a superstar. And Taylor is rounding out nicely into that role. And I said it earlier today that 5 more years with Taylor Hall at $6 million is, that looks pretty good for the Oilers, I would say.
First line left wing all-stars, are going to be Hall or Jamie Benn?
Yeah, good question. I have a feeling it probably ends up being Jamie Benn.
Or Patrick Sharp. I guess I shouldn't forget him.
Yeah, Patrick Sharp is, to me, and if you're ranking the left wingers, I would say that probably Patrick Sharp for me, probably comes in there for me. I just, the way he scores goals, his overall game, I've seen this guy play on a whole bunch of different stages. He's just a fantastic hockey player all around. But Taylor's putting up points at a torrid pace this year. He's played fewer games than these guys and has more points. His points per game is better. So he's right in the conversation for best left wingers in the game. He has to be. And, 27 goals, probably on his way to 30 if he can get there. It's just a great year for Taylor. And really, everybody knew that this guy was developing into a real, real good player. But he's turning into, like I said before, a superstar in this league.
The game yesterday, the second period, was vintage 1980. Three scraps, three goals. Yeah. Building was loving it. Dallas Eakins admitted that he went over to Bruce Boudreau afterwards to clarify that he didn't send out Pinizzotto to fight him because, sure, you know, Perry and Getzlaff were upset about it. Do you think he needed to do that?
Do I think he needed to do that with Bruce, you mean?
Yes.
No, I don't think he had to. But I think Dallas is the kind of guy who, he probably approaches the coaching fraternity with a certain amount of respect, and I think you can get a reputation out there as a guy who will send, if you're a coach that does that, you'll get a reputation for that. And so I think Dallas just wanted to make it clear that look, he had no intention of doing that, and that he didn't, that it wasn't his decision for that to happen. And I mean, maybe part of it is just so that Bruce understands that, look, this wasn't me, just from a retribution standpoint. Like Boudreau doesn't need to send anybody else to go try and fight. You know, it's not like Dallas did this to send a smoke signal to the Anaheim bench. I mean, Pizzotto managed to get a guy who was playing an important role on their team to fight and take him off the ice. It was a great play by him. So, I think Dallas just has respect for the coaching fraternity and for the craft. And Bruce is a veteran guy, and I think Dallas just wanted to make it clear that he didn't have that intention. I don't have a problem with it. Do you? Do you think it's soft that he did that?
No, I'm curious. Maybe it happens all the time. If players are yapping at you, you know what? Whatever, let them yap at you. Clearly, you're getting them off their game. To me, that's kind of gamesmanship, isn't it?
Well, didn't you think the Ducks were a little off their game after all that happened?
Well, of course they were, because Pinizzotto fed Bolesky.
Yeah, you beat him up good. And this is the thing. Anaheim did a decent job of taking care of their own business too, right? And it might have cost them the game because they ran out of time and they couldn't come back. But that's why Anaheim is a good team, because when people shove them around and when people take advantage of their people, they have players who answer the bell, who get upset, players who have gamesmanship and who stand up for one another. And Maroon did a nice job of that. A couple scraps there. Beauchemin was yappy. The whole team got yappy. And did it throw them off their game a little? Yes. Did it maybe cost them in some ways a period or the game? Potentially. But in the long run, being a team that functions that way, a team that has each other's backs, a team that engages when the going gets tough and doesn't back down, that's going to win you more games than it's going to cost you. And it might have cost him one last night, but I thought Anaheim responded great to that.
Evander Kane was a healthy scratch in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Now, because he broke a team rule but not curfew, they haven't said what it was, it just wasn't curfew. If Kane is on the way out in Winnipeg, Craig McTavish, pick up the phone?
Well, I'm not certain, because we don't know the whole story and we don't know how bad it could potentially be. I think you need to be a little bit careful. This team has a lot of good, decent, young offensive forwards. So he doesn't necessarily fill the need that they have. Now, he's more physical than the guys the Oilers have, but I don't know that he's the exactly priority number one right now. I think that they are looking for natural centers, I think, is more important than another left winger. They've got two pretty good left wingers as of right now. So I would probably say no. I think the asking price would probably be fairly high, and I just don't think he is the answer to what the Oilers need right now.
Now, see, I think it, to me, it would depend on what the asking price is. But Kane, who skates that well, who's, you know, 6'2", they don't have any big forwards. And Kane would now be their biggest winger, who clearly has skill. And I understand people are maybe concerned about the issues, but you know what? There's a lengthy list of players who maybe early in their career did some things that they regretted doing and didn't act like mature adults, and then got to a new place, and guess what? Their maturity was the only thing that changed. Their ability was still the same. I would take a shot at Evander Kane all day if I was the Edmonton Oilers, because, well, sure, he's a winger. I understand that. I look at what they don't have in their top. They still don't have size and skill, and he brings both.
Well, I hear what you're saying. He has size, he has skill, but if you talk to people who cover that team regularly, and if you talk to people who watch him play every single night, they will say things to you like, doesn't use his teammates very good, freelances, on his own program. That this isn't just a guy who missteps here and there when he doesn't have his skates on. There's some significant issues in-game with the way this guy's functioning in a team atmosphere. To me, that's a warning sign. So what's his career best in goals? 2011-2012, he had 30 goals. David Perron's pushing 30 goals this year. So if you have Evander Kane on the left side, right now you've got Taylor Hall and David Perron locking down your left side. And David Perron doesn't come with those sorts of issues. So I'm not saying that Perron's a better player than Kane. I'm saying Perron's a heck of a good second-line left winger. You're already cleared up in your number one spot. I think the Oilers have different holes to fill.
Would you trade Kane for Perron straight up?
Well, I don't think Winnipeg will do that.
Okay.
Kane's locked up for a bunch of years here, isn't he?
Yeah, and he scored 30 when he was 20 years of age, right?
For sure. And I think his high end is, he sorts it out and really puts it together and plays with better players, this could be a real, real good point producer. But whatever assets the Oilers are willing to move, they need to use those assets to get better defensemen and another really good center. I mean, they Nugent Hopkins and Gagne as a 1-2 combination is going to be tough. I think they need to solidify some size and strength at the center position. And I don't think they need to use assets to go get wingers. They kind of already have a bunch of those.
Looking at, the Oilers, they don't just need a second line center. I think they need a third line center. I want to talk about Anton Lander, who, people always rave about Detroit and how they develop their players, which there's no doubt about it. But people, when they develop them, they don't really come into the NHL until they're 23. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or 24. And Datsyuk and Zetterberg. And you look at the age of these guys, they weren't lighting it up when they were that young. And, Gustav Nyquist is 24 years of age.
Absolutely.
Right? He played last year for a bit. Then guess what? Went back down to the minors to start this season. They don't rush guys along. And I've noticed a lot of people saying, well, Anton Lander, it's make or break. The guy's, 22 years of age. He was still drafted. He's younger than Nyquist. He finally got a good season going offensively in the American League, playing center. They bring him up and they play him on the wing, not center. Now, I know it's because of injuries, but you look at that and you wonder, what is Lander? Some guys are just better at a certain position, and I think he's a better centerman than he is a winger. His foot, he's when he has to stand still all the time in the wing, he's not a good enough skater to get up to speed fast enough.
Yeah. See, this is part of the issue with Lander is that he doesn't have great foot speed. I thought he was faster earlier on in his career.
No, he's never been a great skater.
I thought he looked faster when he first got to the Oilers compared to where he's at now. I don't know if he's put on some weight. I'm not saying he was ever fast, but I'm saying I didn't notice his skating to be so much of an issue earlier on. But you notice it, and I'm not sure what he is, because he's not a big guy. He's not overly physical in his game. He doesn't hit a whole lot. He's not imposing in any way, shape, or form. So it's got to be kind of this depth two-way game that you get a feel for the more you watch him play. But the more you watch him play at this level, the more you question where his place is and if he's ready or if he belongs yet.
Yeah, because he's not. That's my point, Ryan. I don't think he's ready. He shouldn't be. They should have just shouldn't be here.
And especially they've got him in this top six role they're sort of trying to get a look at right now, and it just game after game he ends up down the lineup. Just he feels like failure after failure, game after game, where he doesn't produce. I mean, I would almost prefer they just throw Ryan Smith there and just leave him and let Lander play where he's supposed to play. I don't know what you need Will Acton in that spot for right now. Throw Will Acton on the wing. Let Anton Lander play where you think the guy's going to play for you.
That's my point. Exactly.
I don't disagree with that. Look, he put up points in the minors, so somebody goes, well, let's see if he can do it if we give him good players. But it's not happening.
No.
So now they've got however many games they've had him for him, whatever they have left, to try and get a sense for where he's at, because Craig McTavish needs to know, do I need to go get a fourth line center this summer? Like, what am I doing here? Or a third line center and make Boyd Gordon your fourth line center? What do they have to do at the center position? And right now, big question mark where Lander's concerned.
Well, they have to get another guy and have what's called competition, and don't go into camp with all these positions labeled for guys. You know what? Go in with so many veterans on the blue line that if some of the young guys beat them out, awesome. It doesn't mean because Oscar Klefbom played 20 games here that he has to start here next year. There's nothing in cement that says that has to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, I see some people publishing potential lineups next year with Mark Arcabello as the second line center because they moved Gagne for saying that it's not happening. I know he had a good stretch early on in the season, but Mark Arcabello is not a second line center. Mark Arcabello is a 13th forward, a call up from the minors. His contract reflects that. $600K, one-way deal, recognizes that you're not your average minor league player. You're a very high-end minor league player, and if we have to call you up, we're happy to, and you're usable and serviceable. But that contract was not a symbol that he's going to be here next year. You're willing to pay your top two or three players in the minors NHL money to have good, serviceable players down there. So anybody who thinks that Arcabello is in the grand plan because of this contract is reading the tea leaves wrong.
Shocker, always good to talk to you, man. We'll do it again this week.
Okay, buddy. Look forward to it.